After working in the telecommunications industry, Vincent, a.k.a. Vinnie Eastwood, quit when he noticed that when he lied to the customer, the company's profit margins went up. Unable to work or have an employer in the conventional sense, Vinnie went out with frustration at the mainstream media and began to make his own news by interviewing activists about real issues that truly affect New Zealand and the world. The idea is to get the activists who live and breathe the issues and are not bound by corporate or political parties to be pundits, reporters, watchdogs on the multifaceted agendas of the global elite right here at home. He hopes to one day be part of an alternative media revolution that will replace the mainstream media with something that's relevant. Please welcome the host of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, Vinnie Eastwood. Hi, Vinnie. How are you?
I mean, somewhat fabulous is kind of my standard response.
Somewhat fabulous. Why is that?
That's a good response.
Yeah, it is a good response, and it sounds really awesome.
All right. So I'm just curious. How did you? I've read a little bit about in the bio. How you were working somewhere, and you start to question when you working at a telecommunications company, right? What was your awakening process like, basically? I guess that's what I'm trying to ask you. How did you wake up? What are the details of your awakening?
Well, a lot of people have asked me this, and it usually turns into like a 3-hour show because it's actually a long process, you know. Okay, firstly, I got busted for weed. Then I found out that all the cops were liars and found out that all the judges in the justice system was complete BS. Then I wound up doing all my community service, and I took mescaline, and my mescaline trip, I got to talk to my future self, and he told me to go to a university in Auckland and get a job as a telesalesman, and I did. And then I went to the University of Auckland, and I think the last essay that I wrote for them was a really, really good one that was criticizing television and had all these source documents and things to back up my case, and they gave me a D. So I was like, well, frack university, it's all full of BS, I'm getting the hell out of here. So I did, and I became a full-time telesalesman, became the number one on the floor. And then the boss came over to me one time and asked me what I think I could do to actually improve the company. And so I told him everything, and he was the boss above my direct bosses. You know how you got like various levels of management? Well, he was a level above the guys who directly managed me, and they got really jealous that the boss came to me to ask for ideas. And yeah, I wound up getting promoted from that position, and I told them I didn't want to do sales anymore because I was just sick of it, you know. Sales is really hard, emotionally speaking. But it taught me how to talk to people and get across points really concisely and quickly, because you only have really a 30-second window before people hang up on you and go, sorry, I'm not interested. I didn't like my new position as a business account manager because there were no business accounts that I managed. It was just freaking telesales, except instead of calling people at home, I was calling businesses during the day. So I wrote a 7-page essay. I went around during my position as an account manager to all these different parts of the company, all the different divisions and things like that, and befriended a whole lot of people across the company and talked to them about the problems that they were experiencing in their positions and the lack of training and the lack of staff retention, lack of this, lack of that. So wrote a 7-page essay about what was wrong with the company. The CEO the second in command CEO looked over it, got to about page 1.5 and said, all right, this meeting is over and the issues are solved. And then fine.
It's totally like Jerry Maguire.
I was just going to say that. Wow, it totally reminds me of that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so about a week later, my boss tells me to come to the cafe next door, slaps down a piece of paper, says, sign it. I go, what am I signing? He says, you're going to leave in 5 minutes and we'll give you $3,000. You know, 6 weeks' pay. Get out of here. And it was like, well, I haven't had a summer holiday in a while, so yeah, I'll take it. So I took the money and had a holiday, and then I had to go back to work again. And I wound up working for a psychopath who called me at 9 o'clock at night on a Friday evening, telling me to get up, get off the couch, put the beer down, and it was at my mate's place, you know, and write down the name of a client to call on Monday. And it's not like an isolated incident. That's just one that sticks out for me specifically. And I developed kind of like a massive dependency on weed at that time, I really, really couldn't handle the job. I was absolutely frustrated. I was listening to a lot of Alex Jones and things like that. So I was getting into that sort of incredible rage sort of thing. And that's why cannabis became a big part of my life, is to contain that rage. And and so then I quit that job. After one day, because they'd been sending me all over the city, right, like miles and miles, and I had to pay for my own gas, had to pay for my own phone and everything to go to these appointments to sell people stuff. And it turns out that they were giving all the leads for the streets that were like in my neighborhood, in my suburb, to somebody who was living halfway across the city. And they were giving me leads for halfway even further across the city, you know. And I was just like,
this doesn't make sense.
These people don't really, and it occurred to me that these people really don't give a crap about me. I'm getting the freak.
You just call them retarded too. I mean, that's retarded.
Well, my friend John Eisenhower, who publishes Uncensored magazine here in New Zealand, I gave him a ring. And I said to him, John, I really feel like quitting my job. Like, I'd never actually quit a job before. And I go, what should I do? And he goes, well, just ask yourself one question. I'll never forget this. Does it feel right? And I said, yeah, it does. It feels really right to quit. So I did. I took my $11,900 worth of mall shopping vouchers that I got for a bonus as 1 month and my $4,000 cash. And I bought a little iMac computer and a video camera. Started going to protests and public meetings, filming them, editing them, putting them up online for people. And then an American producer, Mitch Santel, my good friend, noticed my videos and gave me a spot as a guest host, or rather co-host, on the American Freedom Report. I'm the first New Zealander to have an American-based talk radio show, because I know more about America than a lot of Americans do, which is a very sad indictment on the country. And they didn't like Brent Johnson, but they did like me, so they fired him and gave me the position, hence the Vinnie Eastwood show.
Oh, wow.
Interesting. Right, wow, that's a great answer.
Hey, I got that done in less than 7 minutes. Last time it took 3 hours.
Well, I guess we got... Yeah, we must have gotten the condensed version of the show, but it was full. It was complete. So very good, very thorough. So, Vinny, you're a Whig, and you obviously know what's going on. And so, what do you think about, or what's your opinion on people who are aware of sort of what's going on, what the globalist agenda is, and what they're planning, and they still defend it, sort of using this Darwinian kind of survival of the fittest, like maybe it's just meant to happen because certain people are supposed to be weeded out? What do you think about that?
It's called being a cowardly, mind-controlled slave, I guess. No, seriously.
I'm giving you shit. I agree with you.
I'm not going to mince words here. I mean, if you support the New World Order agenda and you know what the agenda is and what they're doing and what they have been doing and you still support it, you're a cowardly, mind-controlled slave scum, all right? And I've got no frickin' time for you. Kill yourself. Today. Okay? No, seriously. If you love right. depopulation, if you love exterminating people all over the world, if you love deliberately putting drugs, vaccines, and all of this stuff into people's systems so that their quality of life shrinks terribly and they eventually die after giving all of their money to the evil medical industry that doesn't care one iota about their health, then please, if you're so much of a fan of depopulation, volunteer. Kill yourself.
Yeah, I say that, Dad, so that. Yeah, I mean, not like exactly like you've said it, but I've said, you know, a few people that are for depopulation, kill yourself. But I mean, I know
they never do.
That talk about...
They never do. Okay, yeah. It's kind of like the it's kind of like the Aztecs. You know, we need to sacrifice people in order to make the sun go away from the moon or something like that. You know, have you noticed that they always sacrifice other people? They never it's never self sacrifice. Okay,
right.
All right. So this is the difference between me and the people that you're talking about. I believe in self sacrifice. They believe in sacrificing other people for their own benefit.
Wow. I mean, there are people that would say too that, oh, well, you know, there have always been hierarchies and there have always been people that control, you know, the world or you know, this has always been going on. So what's the, what's, why is it so now?
Well,
I'm playing devil's.
Firstly, because now the hierarchies have the power to finish the job that they started, which was to control every aspect of their slaves' lives. And quite frankly, you can't let them have that, because every time that they've tried to gain that kind of power and control over people, it hasn't worked out well for those people, nor has it even worked out for the elite, who continually collapse and destroy every single thing that they attach. It's like a cancer, for example. You know that cancer is a virus? I found that really fascinating, and it's a self-replicating virus, and what it's capable of doing is getting all of these cells to keep growing and growing and growing, but it what's interesting and what's different about it and many other viruses is that it could conceivably survive forever, so long as it didn't kill the host. And that's what the New World Order is. They're a cancer virus, more or less. And incidentally, they've created cancer virus, and they're growing and growing and growing, and eventually they will kill the host, despite the fact that they think that they can live forever. Okay, I see that coming, and I'm going to try and prevent it by anything within my power to do so.
What do you... Do you think that there's some people that are just aren't going to wake up? Because I think once you kind of realize what is going... How the world works, right? And also, we don't claim to know everything.
To say that there's certain people who aren't going to give up is to say that there's a limit to human potential. There's a limit to human creativity. Do you believe that?
Yeah.
No. See, humans have infinite potential, infinite creativity. So I'm of the belief structure that based on that fact alone, everybody has the capacity to wake up. However, people are stupid because you're trying to go out and wake people up. Okay, let me explain that. Let me explain that. You can't wake people up, all right? Here's why. Did somebody wake you up? Did somebody force you to sit down and watch 160 documentaries end over end? Did somebody force you to listen to hundreds and hundreds of hours of Patriot Talk Radio in order to accrue this knowledge that you've got? No. Nobody did that for you. You did that for yourself, didn't you? Okay, so therefore it was you that woke you up. However, it's about getting your foot in the door with people sometimes. Now, it takes... seven people, I think, to tell you the exact same thing. And it's seven different people, mind you. You can't just go up and tell somebody the same thing seven times and it'll sink in. In fact, they'll just get annoyed with you and probably hit you. Or ostracize you, which is what happens to a lot of patriots and truthers, because they listen to this this propaganda of, you've got to wake people up, you've got to wake people up. And it's just like, oh my God, it doesn't work. All it does is make you lose your friends, lose your family, lose your job, and lose your sanity. That's what trying to wake people up does. How about this? How about you take personal responsibility and wake yourself up? And then you only play your part. You imagine for a fact that you are one of seven people that will go and talk to this person, you know. Oh, I'm going to get a vaccine for my child, you know. Your vaccines have got a whole lot of really dangerous ingredients in them, like thimerosal and mercury and formaldehyde and aborted fetal cells and so on and so forth. They're like, oh, no, that's BS. All right, man. Well, your kid is going to die if you don't listen to me. Go for your life. All right, and that's all you can do, you know. Let people take personal responsibility. You tell them, hey, there's a cliff there, and if you're not careful, you'll fall over it. And if they fall over it, you really can't do anything else but laugh at them. All right, so the point of my show, and in fact, it's interesting we should bring this up, because I was just at a dance party festival, a eco dance festival kind of thing. Like, you're not allowed to bring in any rubbish, you're not allowed to smoke, you're not allowed to do a whole bunch of other things. It was kind of like an Agenda 21 dance festival is what I describe it as. And
sorry, go ahead.
And a listener of mine who heard me on the James Corbett Report, who I'd met one time at a protest. I couldn't remember him when he was first starting to talk to me. I was like, who the hell is this guy? And then I remembered who he was, and he started advising me about you know, how to run my show and all of this kind of stuff, you know. I love it when people do that. And I actually do, because if you don't take any criticism, you never wind up improving the things that you're doing, right? And he was telling me about how I'm damaged damaging people by waking them up, right? Like, that I should be try and be more credible and be a bit more toned down and what have you. And he was walking away, like, with that, trying to leave it at that. And I go, whoa, hold on, you got the wrong idea about my show, man. My show is not about waking people up at all. At all. All right? It's not my responsibility to wake people up, is my opinion. What my show is about is having all those people who have already woken up, who have lost their family, who have lost their friends, who have lost their job, and have lost their sanity. That's the show. This is the show for them, okay? Only them. Because they're the ones that need a little bit of humor in their life. They're the ones who need a bit of levity in order to maintain their sanity. That's the reason why the show is there. Really nothing else at this point.
Right. And so I guess when we were kind of wondering if you think everybody's going to wake up, because I'm sure you've come across certain people who, I guess, you know, no matter how much information is presented to them, like, for example, I have a son who is vaccine damaged, and I know people who have children also in the autism. My son has autism now, and he was damaged by the vaccine. And so there are people who have autistic children and who watch their children regress after certain vaccines as well, but then they still vaccinate them. They still don't get it. Like, how, I mean, so I guess we're kind of wondering is, like, what is it about certain people that kind of come into this consciousness and you say, wow, this thing happened. I'm going to investigate this. I have a curiosity. I want to know why these things are happening. And if it's happening to me, is it happening to others? And so on and so forth. And you kind of go down those rabbit holes, right? Mm. But then there's others who just will just kind of close off to it. So I guess what we're kind of wondering is, why is it that some people do and some people don't?
Here's a question. Is it your responsibility to figure out everybody else's life's problems for them?
No, I would hope not. I mean, I just did what it was basically a survival thing for myself, because I had to figure out what happened to my son. And then once I figured out, okay, this is what's happening, I originally just wanted to know how to fix the problem. And then once I was investigating that, then I said, oh, and then this is going on. I saw the interconnection, the whole, like you brought up Agenda 21. I could see all those things, all the connections to this vaccine problem and the eugenics, and it just all made sense. It became very clear to me that it was a bigger issue, that it was a global thing going on. And but I don't see.
Here's the difference, though. But do you have the IQ of a pituitary retard? I expect not.
No, but I don't think. Right. Are you saying it comes down to intelligence? Because I think it has more to do with intelligence or something else. There's another element. Like, we played around, like, with is it self-esteem? You know,
it's a range of factors. Let's say, for example, you wanted to tie down people's minds. It's kind of like tying down a zeppelin. Zeppelins have these massive ropes, and they're at all different points along the zeppelin in order to keep it down. And that's how our minds have been warped, I think, is that we get tied down by chemical contamination, whether through vaccines, pharmaceutical drugs, pesticides, herbicides, artificial sweeteners and things of that nature. That corresponds over to diet as well, nutrient deficient food. Your brain can't function properly. Even at birth, you get birth trauma. It's kind of like from cradle to grave, trauma, poison, and distraction. It's actually very statistically unlikely that somebody will wake up. But here's the positive side of it. You don't actually need everybody to wake up. I really need to stress this to people. Any successful revolution has never had more than 5% of the population on their side. Okay? Never. You only need to wake up one in 20 people. Tops. Maybe even with the internet and advanced thinking and strategizing and what have you, because there's a hell of a lot of intelligent people in this movement, we might even only need 2%, maybe even 1. All right, so this war is about people's souls, I think. It really is kind of, in many ways, a very spiritual war. And everybody needs to search their own soul and determine what they are willing to give, what they are willing to sacrifice, if they actually want to save humanity in general. Don't go for the deadwood, all right? Some people, I think, are almost to the point of, you know, you can just give up on them. You know, it's like, okay, not my responsibility. I'm going to try and help the people who can be helped. It's like triage on the battlefield that we're dealing with here. Some people are too badly injured by the system to be saved, maybe. And if they're not too injured to be saved, then it's quite likely that they can just save themselves. And all you need to do is encourage them rather than tell them what to think and tell them everything that's going on. Another thing that truthers do that really doesn't work, and I still am guilty of this myself, is you try and give people information. All right. So, you know, you sit there and you keep talking and you keep talking, you revealing information. This other person's sitting there. You think that they're listening, but they're not. They're actually zoning out because nothing you're saying makes sense to them. What's more effective than that is questioning. So, you know, oh, there's no such thing as a new world order. There's no such thing as an elite or an Illuminati or a criminal cabal or anything like that. Okay, let me ask you a question then. Do you believe that huge quantities of money and power attracts criminals? Well, yeah. Okay. Do you believe that criminals are capable of infiltrating into officialdom, you know, organizations, politics, and things of that nature? Do you believe that there's certain politicians that are criminals? Yeah. Do you believe that politicians wind up making their way into power and actually are corrupt at the time? And they go, yeah, okay, absolutely. So, you know that criminals get control of finances then, and you know that criminals wind up getting into positions of power in politics. And politics and business run the world. So, ergo, criminals probably have a large foothold in controlling the world's finances and politics, right? Because they play dirty, don't they? Yeah. Okay. Well, is it therefore such a stretch of the imagination that a massive criminal syndicate with huge quantities of money and acting with pure scumbaggery and malicious intent have seized control of the power structures of this world and currently, to a large degree, control the lives of everybody? Is that really, really so hard to believe? Yeah, no, it's not really that hard to believe at all. Okay, good. There you go. I haven't produced any information in that process of trying to wake this person up. They're the ones who come to the conclusions of their own. I'm only the one who provides the questions by which they can provide those solutions for themselves. And in which way, it's kind of like, have you ever seen my Big Fat Greek Wedding? How the Greek woman tried to convince the Greek man that the wedding and all of the ideas and everything was his idea when really it was the woman's idea, and they just tried to make him think that it was his?
Yeah,
that's the methodology, isn't it? I think that wakes people up to a large extent, a hell of a lot more than just sitting there ranting at them for a half an hour with them just going and not agreeing and just hoping the conversation ends desperately.
Right.
Oh my God, I've been that person.
Yeah, totally.
I see myself. Because you just have this urgency, I think, when you first kind of put everything together that you just, like, we talk about, like, Chicken Little, like, the sky is falling. You know, you just want to run around and tell everybody. And you think that's going to solve everything, but it doesn't.
Yeah. I think one of the most important realizations to come to is realizing that you're under mind control. All right? How do you know if you're under mind control? If you never question the fact that you're under mind control. All right. Television has been bathing me in its electronic BS for my entire life, and all of these other electromagnetic frequencies and everything going through the air. My diet's shocking and so on and so forth. Blah, 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 blah. There's all sorts of influences on your mind that are out there. And I think if we step back a bit and just be a little bit humble and it's just like, you know what, before I start trying to solve other people's problems with this only tiny bit of knowledge that I've accrued so far, maybe I need to solve quite a few of these problems myself and or get together with other people who are still suffering under these particular things so that I don't feel alone. That's the hardest part about waking up to the New World Order and the scumbaggery system is you just feel so freaking lonely. It's like nobody listens to you. And I've had a number of people on my shows who You know when you're about to interview somebody and you get bad vibes about them, kind of thing, because they've been through traumatic experiences, and as a result, their brain has had to shut down certain things, like being able to listen to anybody else, or having any social grace and what have you. This is what happens when you become a victim of the system. And I'm not saying calling these people victims per se, you know, they're fighters, they're warriors and what have you, but the fact of the matter is they've been damaged in some cases permanently, and they don't have the ability to come back to that kind of, ooh, I'm a nice friendly person who's helping humanity and whatnot anymore. No, it's all about the fact that I've been messed round, and now I want to get back at the people who have done me wrong. And as a result, they trust very few people, including themselves. And when you can't trust yourself to do the right thing, you're in big trouble, and you're actually going to cause a lot of damage to people who aren't actually your enemies. And you'll see these people in chat rooms, you know, they're genuine people who have had real terrible things happen to them, you know, like a pedophile ring stole their child or something like that, and they've been without their child for like 7 years or something, and then people start criticizing them because they're blaring through a megaphone and calling them crazy and whatnot. Imagine what they were to do to you emotionally. You know, how much do you love your child? How much would you be destroyed if that was taken from you? You know, people don't understand that. I do. Not because I've been through it, but because I've interviewed so many people and I empathize, you know.
Yeah, you know, that's a reoccurring thing that we've been talking about on our show lately, too, is the lack of empathy that people have for each other, just in general. Like, you know, April will get people telling, you know, yelling at her about her child, saying that she made it up and that didn't happen to her. Or, you know, people that we've known that have cured themselves of cancer and they're trying to help other people, you know, but then they'll get attacked. And it just, it's very interesting that it seems like there's this lack of empathy that, you know, that is occurring in, whether it's within the truth movement or just in general, I would say, in and outside the truth movement. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think we call it a movement. I think it's more of a phenomenon. Like, it's not happening because somebody started the movement. I mean, here we go. If it's a movement, who started the truth movement? Yeah, nobody did. Okay, truth is a universal. I think it's about as close to a positive religion as you can come to, and that's actually one of my profound realizations, is that being a truther is actually a form of religion, because we have our own belief structures, we have rules, things that we're not allowed to do, we have defined enemies that are evil and what have you. It's so similar to a religion that it's not funny. We all have our preachers and pastors and ministers and so on and so forth all over the place, and many of them are also corrupt. This is another really sad thing, is when you get into this movement and you think that because, oh, I've left the corporate world behind and I'm no longer watching TV, therefore there's no lies, no megalomaniacs, and no psychopaths in the truth movement. Absolutely not the case. I can assure you, they're there, and they're there in droves for a reason. Psychopaths crave power and control, all right? And believe me, there is a lot of power in the truth. And you can gain a lot of control over people who think that you're telling them the truth and think that you're doing it for best intentions to try and help wake them up. Then they become devotees, then they become your supporters, and then they start defending you against anything that you, anyone else criticizes you for without you having to do anything. All right, and that's the danger of this. The microphone, that's a freaking dangerous tool, I can tell you. You become very egotistical, and you need to have an ego to an extent to be a radio show host in the first place. And I don't think people understand precisely what the ego is, and that's why it goes out of control. The ego is, I think, self-respect. Okay? Somebody comes up to you and just goes, you know, oh, you're stupid, you're a moron. It's like, dude, I've got like 130 IQ, okay? I speak with PhDs and MDs on a mind-to-mind level on an almost daily basis, okay? Your friends all sit around doing nothing about except complaining about the New World Order, and you don't even do anything about it, and you're calling me an idiot. Now, that person will then accuse me of being egotistical.
You know, no, but I think there is a balance that you have to have because it can get out of control. So you calling it maybe self-respect when it is control. What is the ego when it's out of control, when you are to the point where you don't, where you're very selfish and you're not taking other people?
It's a spectrum. This is what the ego is. Ego is self-respect. Now, self-respect all the way on one spectrum, no respect for others on the other end of the spectrum because your self-respect has taken way, way too much space up. That's the ego. Respect yourself, that's ego, and respect others, that's being human.
How do you keep from going crazy with all the information that you come across? Because there's just so much, and I feel the same way too. You know, when I'm researching things, or you know, April and I often talk about how also this is very exciting for us because it satisfies our curiosity. And you come across so much information, but do you think that there's a point where you can know too much information to the point where you know so much that it just it can drive you mad to a certain degree?
Yeah, it happens to a lot of people. It hasn't happened to me. I mean, or at least it hasn't happened to me permanently. I went through that stage, and then I realized, oh my God, if I don't find some kind of coping mechanism with all this really scary information and terrible instances and things of this nature, I'm going to go freaking nuts. So I start making jokes about it. And it turns out that if you're laughing, it stimulates the brain, gives you an endorphin hit, and in fact allows you to bring levity into a situation. If I may, there's a quote from Scrubs. Have you ever seen the comedy show Scrubs?
All right.
I think I have a recording here that I might be able to play. Here it is. It's why do we make jokes? And as a truther, when I was watching this episode of Scrubs, and I think it might have been. I don't know how long ago it was, but it had quite a profound effect on me personally because I really resonated with what the characters were saying here. Here we go. It's about 40 seconds. Listen to this one.
You see Dr. Wenninger? He's explaining to that family that something went wrong and that the patient died. He's going to tell him what happened, he's going to say he's sorry, and then he's going back to work. You think anybody else in that room's going back to work today? That is why we distance ourselves. That's why we make jokes. We don't do it because it's fun. We do it so we can get by. And sometimes because it's fun. But mostly it's the getting by thing.
Yes, yeah, so you get it now, don't you? Comedy, laughter is healing, and I think I credit Bill Hicks largely with my wake up in the first early years. I mean, it waking up doesn't happen instantly. It's like you go from a slave who believes in the system totally and will die to defend it. I was one of those people, all the way over to you know the system's evil and you will die to defend your brothers and sisters in this family we call humanity from their scumbaggery. It doesn't happen overnight, okay? And it takes a long, 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 long time soul-searching. How many nights have I spent freaking crying myself to sleep, just terrified about how horrible everything is and how terribly everybody's being treated, how all the kids are sick and, oh, God. You know, it can drive you freaking crazy, and that's why you have to laugh about it. You have to make jokes. Okay, it's not an option. Ladies and gentlemen, okay?
Yeah.
There's no choice about it. You will either develop a sense of humor in order to distance yourself from the trauma that you experience just knowing what is going on, or you will resign yourself to becoming insane, and you will become one of those crazy conspiracy theorists who believe everything that they get told and are always totally negative and telling everybody that they're slaves and have a really hold a pin on your fellow man and say, oh, nobody can wake up. It's just like, well, hold on a second, bro. Were you awake when you were born? All right. Did you know about the New World Order when you were born? Like, no, of course not. I didn't know anything. Well, all right. And did you know about it your entire life? Let's say your parents brought you up with teaching you about the New World Order and everything. Well, no, of course I didn't. So you're telling me at some point you woke up even though there was no hope of anybody waking up. Is that what you're telling me? Stop being retarded. Stop being negative. Have a frickin' laugh. Have some frickin' fun, all right? You're alive currently, aren't you? Aren't you? If you're currently alive, then there is still hope.
And that's in itself kind of a miracle when you think of all the things that they have their hands in with the fluoride and the chemtrails and the vaccines and the foods and everything else and that. We're all, there's so many people still. We're still hanging in there, which is in and of itself kind of inspiring. And Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Oh, no. I was just going to say the fact that they have to do all that to us, right?
And
the fact
it still
that we're standing
fails.
And the fact that they still they have to, who are we? Why are we? You must be very powerful if they have to do all these things to us.
They fear us. They fear the awakening. They fear the power of the human spirit because they don't have a soul. All right? And I think the old adage that mankind fears what it doesn't understand, I think psychopathic archontic entities also fear the soul because they don't understand love. They don't understand empathy. They don't understand creativity. They don't have any of it. They never have, not for thousands of years. And now there's a rising within humanity that is actually bringing out those aspects of our character that we really appreciate and we know that is absolutely necessary for a functioning community. And at the moment, community's been subverted in so many ways. You know, do you know your neighbours, for example? I don't know my neighbours. You know, hardly anybody does. All right. And what happens is when you're living in a city of a million plus people, you have to have space to yourself because people can't have other people in their face all the time, you know. And I think what happened in older communities, you know, smaller communities, and this still happens in rural towns in America and around New Zealand and around the world, of course, where everybody knows everybody, okay, you'll find that there's very little crime in those areas. You'll find that people actually look out for each other in those areas. I mean, it might not be the most exciting lifestyle to live in a rural farm town with only one bar, but you have the added comfort of knowing that you're not going to be burgled tonight. You might not. You're probably not going to just get murdered on the street randomly by a stranger. You know, everybody's looking out for each other. In a city, that can't happen without the advent of close-knit community. And name me one major city suburb that has a really, really low crime rate to the point where everybody absolutely feels safe. It's pretty much all of them, right? But that's not because of a community there. That's because there's police rolling around, right? That's because there's a law in place, or it's because the residents might be armed and prevent people from doing that. It's not because they care about each other, right? I think that what we've done is we've taken individual responsibility and collectivism and we've crisscrossed them, okay? So individual responsibility is about taking responsibility for, let's say, I don't know, the safety of your community, all right? You see a kid who falls down on their bike outside your road or anything, you go and you help them up, right? And if you see a cop beating up somebody who's completely innocent, who wasn't doing anything, was completely non-violent, you come up and you film them, right? All right? That's what it is. It's just about playing your part. You don't need to solve all the problems. Just deal with what's in front of you, because I can guarantee you, on a day-to-day basis, something will come in front of you that you can actually solve. And we had this dance festival that I just came back from yesterday. I was helping to direct the parking, and one car rolls over the road, and there's this big rock there, and they scrape the bottom muffler off, you know, well, not scrape it off, but it certainly scrapes, you know, and a random girl, just one of the normal party goers, picks up that rock out of the middle of the road and tosses it on the side, okay? It's like that. You see a problem that can easily be solved, and don't say, oh, it's somebody else's fault. You can solve it, and you can solve it right this second, can't you? Do it. You'd be surprised how much better it makes you feel. And as a result of you doing that, everybody sees you doing it, and then they start to be inspired to do it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Be the change you want to see in the world, basically.
Well, don't be a dick. You know,
exactly.
Don't be an irresponsible dick. It's pretty straightforward, I think. And collectivism is the direct antithesis of that. It is be a dick and assume everybody else is going to be a dick as well. Maybe I didn't explain that right, actually. It's more along the lines of, I don't have any responsibility. Mm. Everybody else has responsibility for things outside me. I don't even have responsibility for myself. And I want people to tell me what to do for my entire life. I want people to control my assets, my resources, and my mind. That's what collectivism is.
That it comes down to personal responsibility. So in other words, maybe certain folks might avoid, quote, waking up, because it does take you sort of saying that you're dependent upon yourself to do the right thing rather than to call somebody else and have them take care of it. So in other words, there's not crime in that city because everybody knows that the cops are around. Whereas, you know, maybe you wouldn't even necessarily need the cops if everybody knew each other and everybody took care of each other. And so therefore, you don't even need the what do you need them for? But we have this misconception that we need a government, or that we need, or at least I think it's a misconception. What do you think about that, Vinny? Do you think that we need a government, or do you think there needs to be some kind of established government, or do you think we can just do it on our own if we just take responsibility?
Well, I'm of two minds about it. My ideal world would be central government would have virtually no power. Like, basically, it's just a talking house, a clearing house, and things like that to negotiate internationally. And more or less, it would just be a diplomatic thing, a diplomatic post in terms of central government. And government itself should be as small as humanly possible. I think each suburb in a major city should have its own government.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And each street needs its own representative. That way, what you've got is you've got a microcosm of people that are in the same community, are totally responsible for each other, have similar views and resources and things of that nature. So all of their decisions would be made in a very precise and effective fashion for the community, because everybody's familiar with it, right? Whereas, let's say, how many people are in the States right now? 300, if you include the illegals, a billion. And I'm just joking. Yeah, it's more like 2 billion. And when you think about that, how many people do you know personally in your life? According to statistics, anybody will have anything from 3 to 1,000 relationships with people, ranging from close friends to family, and all the way down the chain to just distant acquaintances and whatnot. So the human society, in terms of your brain and how many relationships you can concentrate on or focus, is actually really, really limited. And so that's, I think, what needs to be modeled on government. The smaller, the better. Most notably as well, because small governments have very little funding, very little power. And guess what happens when you've got virtually no money and virtually no power in a position that has lots of responsibilities? No psychopath wants that job.
Right, that's a good point.
Yeah.
All right, so somebody asked me one time, do I want to control scumbaggery? And I don't. And I think what he was trying to do is he was trying to force me into an admission that, oh, I'm a control freak and so on and so forth, you know, using a straw man argument, because he's retarded and he can't actually argue his own point. And, you know, what was funny is, as I said, no, I don't want to control scumbaggery. And he goes, you're backing off on your point. It's just like, dude. Controlling scumbaggery and preventing scumbaggery are two very, very different things, all right? If you have, let's say, I don't know, a health problem, it's because you've not been maintaining your body, isn't it? It's because you've not been keeping up your health, and it's allowed parasites and viruses to make their way into your body and to destroy them, all right, from within. That's the same thing as government. That's the same thing as the police. It's the same thing as power. If you don't provide the proper nutrition to the apparatuses which actually have a responsibility to, pass on protection for people, to help people when they're in need, or to coordinate whenever something needs to be done, say a school needs to be built or whatever. If you don't have anybody like that in those organizations to corrupting them, controlling them of that nature, they'd probably run perfectly. And I had a thought today. like a political party, make the BS real. Okay, so imagine, just imagine, cops protected people. Isn't that an original thought? Like, wow, police actually protecting people rather than...
I was thinking about that the other day. I was driving and I passed by a police car and I just got like a shiver up my spine and I'm like, why am I scared? You know, those are the people that should be protecting me. Why are we scared of policemen now? It's totally opposite, you know?
Yeah.
Of how it should be. It's terrible.
Well, it's because they're trained to be liars, and they specifically single out ones that are psychos for promotion, and they specifically turn away people who are intelligent and have a high moral crisis. So in the main, and I'm not throwing all... I'm not throwing all cops under the bus when I say this, but the organization itself wants a particular type of police officer. That particular type of police officer is a moron who can't think for themselves and are violent and provocative. Okay, that is why people are afraid of the police, because they're morons who are violent. Don't you think that violent morons are something you should actually be cautious of?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that hard to believe, is it? And in terms of making the lies real, let's say police were there to negotiate. Like, let's say you've got two people having an argument and what have you. The cops don't just suddenly jump on somebody and start beating the hell out of them for absolutely no reason without even knowing what situation they're walking into. Okay? The cops stand in the middle of them, negotiate, prevent them from hurting each other, and attempt to reach a peaceful resolution where both parties have something to gain from it. All right? That should be what a policeman's job is. Notice I use the word policeman, not police officer, because an officer is a corporation enforcer. All right, what does CEO mean? You know, chief executive officer. All right, so officers are business people. All right, they're in the business of beating the hell out of people, selling drugs, and run an organized crime. Basically, that's how the cops operate in New Zealand to a large extent. When massive criminal gangs come in and start infiltrating cities and selling methamphetamine and stuff on the streets, the cops don't do anything about it. And I suspect it's because they are supplying these gangs with the drugs to sell to the communities so that they can perfectly justify their continued police enforcement practices. You know, there's all these dangerous drug criminals and things all over the thing. You know, they're really, really dangerous and they beat the hell out of people and they steal stuff on them. What? But you're a cop, bro. You beat the hell out of people and steal stuff off them all the time. What's the difference?
What's the difference? One has a uniform, one doesn't. You know, gangs have uniforms too, but yeah.
I would rather be governed by the mafia, because at least when I pay the mafia protection money, I get protected.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's a good point.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Now, see, this whole making the lies real again, I think, is actually the real structure here, because here's the great thing about the New World Order. They're real bright, okay, in terms of planning. So what you do is you take all of their plans, then you invert them. And you do the exact opposite to everything they want you to do. Okay? You take a local government, for example. It wants to implement Agenda 21. Well, you could change that local government so that it doesn't want to implement Agenda 21 and do the direct opposite of everything. It doesn't mean you completely destroy your entire environment and what have you. What you do is you preserve freedoms and you stop people from winding up being governed by overseas without them even knowing about it. And you have an informed populace. Imagine if the media told the truth and informed people. Imagine if entertainment was intellectually provocative. What if every time you sat down and watched an episode of The Simpsons, you will learn a life-changing piece of information? What if the court systems actually dispensed justice? What if the food companies actually produced food?
I know, right?
You see? Everything in society is a lie. So all you got to do is just turn those lies into something that's real. They may never have been real in the first place. They might have always been a scam. But I think because those scams have been there so long and people truly believe in them, I think that people will be absolutely willing to correct their lies and turn them into truths. That would be a good way to solve all of the problems. Because if all of the lies were true, we'd actually be living in pretty much the perfect society, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, we would.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. So focusing on the on a positive rather than focusing on a negative, you know, to change things, you know, to reverse them, but to actually make them what they're supposed to be. That's really that's a neat perspective, you know. And Vinny, and you have obviously a really good sense of humor. And so just kind of going back to the comedy thing, I think that, you know, we like comedy. We like comedians on our show a lot. And you mentioned Bill Hicks. And I think a lot of comedians are kind of truthers, especially the good ones. So do you have any others that you find to be a regular source of inspiration to your work?
Honestly, I'm past the point of being inspired. Back in the day, you know, I was getting inspired. You know, I got inspired by Bill Hicks, George Carlin, and then inspired by truthers like Alex Jones and Luke Rutkowski and Charlie Veach at the time. And then once you get inspired, you then have the impetus. You go, okay, how long do I need to sit around researching and doing nothing?
Right.
Okay. How long is it going to take me before I actually make a decision to get out the door with a camera or a microphone and start exposing some scumbaggery? How long is it going to take before I file against the IRS and say that I'm not going to pay their frickin' fraudulent taxes anymore? How long is it going to take before you refuse to go to a doctor to get your heart medication anymore because you found a herbal solution that you can grow in your backyard, that you don't need those people anymore? How long is it going to take? And my opinion is, whenever you wake up and start contributing, that is the perfect time. All right? Mm. Wherever it is. It doesn't matter what timing, okay? As long as you start doing it, it's perfect timing.
Right.
You know, people always put pressure on themselves. I never wanted to be Alex Jones, you know. Somebody told me once, you know, Vinny, you like the Alex Jones of New Zealand. And I go, no. Alex Jones is the Vinny Eastwood of America. You know, you got to be totally independent. And that's what happened to me. Because of so much pain and suffering and trauma from getting busted, quitting my jobs and waking up to the truth, all happening simultaneously, more or less over a short period of time. You don't know how strong you are until you have your strength tested. There have been times where I couldn't, just after I got arrested, when I was 19, I think, I was trying to get up these stairs to get to my house, and I couldn't get my legs to work. You know, I was, you know, stumbling and crying and just in incredible pain. It was like from my brain and my understanding of reality all the way through to my inner soul and back down to my very legs themselves. It was all in a state of shock. And the only thing I could actually really think of is Jesus. You know, it's like, Jesus, help me. Jesus, help me get up these stairs. Hey. and surprisingly enough, guess what happened? A whole bunch of strength got given to me by something, and I made it up those stairs. I survived. I learned from my experiences. I've become the most popular conspiracy talk radio show host in New Zealand. The first New Zealander to have an American-based talk radio show in history. I've put more New Zealand activists on air than anybody in history. Full stop. All mainstream media outlets in New Zealand and alternative combined. By myself. This is how much power I have got. And it's taken the trauma and the suffering to realize that. And so I've developed this appreciation for suffering. I think that it's necessary for growth. And so there's times, I think back in, it was either early 2013 or 2012, I forget which, but we were living really high on the hog. You know, we were getting lots of donations and we were kind of like eating out every night. And I was like, whoa. I'm taking advantage of my position here. I'm taking people's generosity, and I'm kind of using it to have a relatively nice lifestyle. I mean, I wasn't spending thousands of dollars or anything like that, but I just felt guilty. And so I hadn't suffered in a while. Hadn't suffered in over a year. Had enough money to pay for anything. So I got down on my knees and I went, you know, Lord, God, Jesus, wherever you are up there, please send me some suffering, some pain, some restriction, something terrible. Please make something terrible happen to me so that I remember what it's like to suffer, so that I remember and don't forget. The very next day, PayPal shuts down my account and all my donations dry up instantly. And I was like, thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. And I basically had to start from scratch, and that was something that occurred to me about the power of belief, is that what was it? Vietnam POW camps, for example, they found that the atheists, American soldiers who were locked away, they died pretty quickly. The real hardcore Christians who had a strong belief in God, when they were locked away in those cages all by themselves, they were never by themselves. They always had the Lord, or at least the belief of the Lord with them. Now, I'm not a Christian or subscribe to any mainstream religion, but I do believe in a higher self. And I think that this is what is one of the basis of the strength, the infinite strength of human beings, is that you can be weak as frack, have no strength whatsoever. You can be totally cowardly. But just the belief in a higher self, that alone is capable of giving you enough power to overcome just about anything. That's quite profound, regardless of whether or not you got taught that power through religion or through your personal experience.
Hmm. Wow. So you said you you don't get inspired anymore. So do you think that we put people on pedestals too much?
Yeah, and guess what happens when those people fall off that pedestal?
Your faith is shattered.
Well, you, the person who put them up there, you get crushed as they come tumbling down upon you. And this has happened to me many times. You know, I get inspired by this person or that person, and then you learn something about them that you wish you didn't know. But unfortunately, because you accept truth when there's actual factual evidence to base those assertions on, yeah, it can be a little bit of a pain in the ass, can't it? Here's the thing. Don't try and put anybody else up on a pedestal. Don't put yourself on a pedestal. The two most important pieces of advice were given to me by the same person at the same time, Catherine Smith from the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine. Don't take yourself too seriously, and don't take what other people have to say about you personally. Now, how this applies to the pedestal thing is that we often put ourselves on pedestals. Yeah. Oh, yes, we do. We think we're authorities on things. Frack, I think I'm an authority on things. And almost every time when I get just confident enough to claim that I've got some kind of authority, somebody will tell me something that I didn't know and I have to change my belief structure again. It's like, damn it, I thought I had it figured out. I believed that for several years and then no. Somebody comes along and says one thing that's got factual evidence to base it on. And it's like, ah, oh, damn, my entire belief structure's out of whack. I have to restructure my life. It's like growing pains, you know. I'm 6'4". When you're growing up as a teenager and you've got these growing pains, man, they're freaking painful, you know. It's like shooting pains up every single arm. But I grow stronger and taller as a result of those pains, right? And I think that's part of the thing about losing faith, you know. If somebody... Whoa, sorry. Everybody who's inspired me has at some point disappointed me, but I've managed to retain the ability to be inspired, not by other people anymore, because I don't need it anymore. I'm my own inspiration. I help people and stuff like that. What I do for a living is inspiring, hence I don't need inspiration. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do, being your own inspiration, and it is disappointing sometimes when you kind of look to somebody and you sort of put your faith in them and then you find out that they're human, or that they, even sometimes worse, that they're actually working for the other team. And you mentioned that at the beginning of the show, we talked about people who maybe are in the truth movement or aren't actually in it to help us, but actually in it to kind of divide and hurt us. Do you have anyone specific that you can name?
Well, first of all, it's a very bad idea to go do that. I've tried it before, and the thing is, these people are psychopaths. All right, now psychopaths fear two things only: exposure and other psychopaths that are worse than they are, because they play by even less rules. But yeah, they don't play fair. They don't. It's torture, psychological torture. If you criticize any one of these people, they have troll armies that they send after you. They write opinion articles about you. They start up fake YouTube channels in your name. They steal the names of your websites and create mirror links and things like that. Steal your ideas. They try to defame you. I mean, one of them calling me a pedophile and stuff like that. Just totally making it up. And what I've found is precisely what Thomas Sheridan, James Corbett, and Jay Widener all agreed upon when I did the psychopath roundtable on my show. Get the frick out of there! Don't have any contact with them at all. It's bad. Okay, all right, right. These people are toxic radiation. Do you know what you do when you're exposed to toxic radiation? Get out of the radiation zone, first of all. Right. That's the first thing that you do. And then the healing can begin.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So
they're out there, but you don't give them attention anymore, because sometimes you can get caught up in that where you're trying to, like, debate these people. But you're right, because they're crazy, so who are you really trying to debate, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And they suck you in. You can feel it.
They're vampires.
I've done that. Yeah. Energy, like energy vampires.
Yeah.
Exactly.
April and I have a method. We've we think we have something. We were talking about how we get attacked sometimes, where we just send them pictures of animals with guns, and then they like leave us alone.
Yeah, we just send them. We don't take it seriously. We just start just making a joke. And it seems to work.
Yeah,
they stop bothering us. It's kind of funny.
Oh, you haven't come up against the real nasty ones yet, then.
Oh no!
And hope you never do. But if you do, and this is how I've solved that problem. He was attacking me on Facebook. He was attacking me via email. He was attacking me via Twitter and YouTube and Skype. You know what? All of those things have in common a block function.
Nice.
Block, 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 block. Like a chicken. Block, 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 block. You know, you get rid of these people, okay? And suddenly, because they cannot message you anymore by any means, they disappear off of your radar, and that's all you want. That's all you want. That's all you can really hope to achieve. I don't know how these people do it, but they never seem to get arrested. And if they do get arrested, they don't go to jail for frickin' long enough.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Hey, and I think that's the criminal justice system in and of itself. It's just criminal.
Yeah, it's true. Well, Vinny, it's been really great having you on the show, and
yeah,
I would love to have you on longer, but we're just about out of time here. But it's been a lot of fun, and you're obviously a lot of fun to hang out with, so I want to thank you so much for being on. But before you go, we'd like you to remind our audience where they can find you and where they can listen to your show.
Okay. You can find me online. So if you don't have a computer, you're pretty well-fragged.
Too bad.
At the Vinny Eastwood Show, there's only one Vinny, it's me, that's why it's the Vinny Eastwood Show, Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood as in, go ahead, make my news.
Okay.
And I do usually try and do 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. It's not easy. In fact, I'm still trying to get into the groove of it, because I went from 2 hours 5 days a week to three hours, and I'm actually finding the transition quite difficult. And eventually, I hope to expand the operation. So I have volunteers coming in to the new studio, Guerrilla Media House, on a regular basis, and I will teach people how to edit audio and video, and upload it, and edit the websites and things like that as I'm doing it, and get them to do it for me. So that once they've got all those skills, it doesn't matter to me whether or not they come back tomorrow, because they can go off and start being a Vinny Eastwood of themselves. And I'm a very disappointing person as well. You know, in meeting me in person, I have anger problems and things of this nature. You know, I'm a flawed man, very flawed man. I'm prepared to admit it, which makes my flaws even more so, I think. And because I can't deny them. And other than that, you can go to my YouTube channel, Mr. News Guerrilla Media, or just search Vinny Eastwood on YouTube, and that should be well enough. I also contribute to the US Independent, started up by the founder of Occupy Corporatism, Suzanne Peisel, with a whole bunch of other credible journalists there. I'm quite honoured to be among that number, like the Saints marching in. And there's realguerrillamedia.com as well. And the whole idea of Guerrilla Media is to give people the tools and the coverage that they deserve. If they're exposing scumbaggery, just give them a little bit of a hand so that they can continue to do it without anybody else's help. Because if you always need help to do something, it means you're always reliant on somebody else. And if you're always reliant, you're always dependent. And if you're dependent, you're not what? Independent.
There you go.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Jenny. It was wonderful.
Yeah,
very
thank you
enlightening.
So much.
And very, very fun.
Well, thank you.
Very fun. We're going to take a short break, and when we get back, Christine and I will close out the show, but we thank Vinny Eastwood for being on the show. Please, sir, enjoy the rest of your day.
I probably will.
Good.